for kidnapping, murdering, sex thing. I'm a fucking star!
Hi, my name is Jamie Roberts.
And I'm Robert Lendrum.
And this is the Running Scared Podcast,
where we review the films that had you running away but coming back for more.
And we are back, Rob. I feel like we've been on a little bit of a hiatus lately. In fact, I don't feel it. I know we have.
Yes, we have.
You know what? You're gonna tell all the listeners out there, why we haven't been able to pod as much as we wanted to recently. But it's good to be back. And I guess this is the first thing I just want to say is, you know, we've missed a couple of our deadlines. This is where we wanted to get some of these pods out. So, you know, an apology from everyone here at Running Scared. We're gonna try and stick to that schedule, make that schedule in the upcoming weeks and months. But Rob, what have you been up to? What's happening, man? I think a lot, right? Gateway.
Yeah. Oh man. Okay. So life's been a little crazy for me lately. It was always a little crazy, but now it's gotten crazier.
Sorry, Rob. Are you going to tell the people what's been going on here? Because I feel like I know what's going on, but they're in the dark.
Yeah, they're in the dark. I know.
Give them what they want.
They
hear.
Really care what's going.
Let
on
them know.
Rob? What's up with him? Why is he so upset? Well, here's the thing. My wife got a fantastic new job opportunity, which is moving us out of Hamilton. I'm sorry, Jimmy.
Been
here less than a goddamn year.
During COVID.
I know. And it was during COVID. So we didn't get the full enjoyment of this beautiful town of Hamilton, Ontario. But we are moving on, going off to another great Canadian city. We're heading to Quebec. We're going to Montreal. Probably the
Habs
birds.
Suck.
But that has required a lot of changes around the house. A, we had to get it ready for selling again. B, my wife has actually already started work, so she had to go up there. So Rob has been solo dadding for about 3 weeks now. I'm at the tail end of the third and hopefully final week of being a completely solo dad. My wife has been here on the weekends, and then, you know, she has to go back to work on the weekdays. So, yeah, it's just been tough. Like I'm doing, you know, obviously trying to keep the house clean because we're doing showings, getting the kids ready every day, getting them out the door, bringing them back, doing dinner, cleaning all that up again, putting them to bed. And like by the time Fox, my 5-year-old, is in bed, it's like getting close to like and actually asleep. And it, sometimes I pass out with him. So like I wake up, it's like 10:30. I just don't have time or energy to come back and, you know, do a record or do a edit. It's just been, I've been gassed. And then I got sick on top of that. So not COVID. At least I tested negative, but I've been stuffed up. You can hear it in my voice right now, probably. It's just been a trial, you know. And anyway, but shout out to all the single parents out there who do this all the time because, man, I feel your pain. And you guys are champions because this is hard work and it's grinding and it's time consuming. But anyway, I'm glad we found some time today. We're going to pick up. We're going to do a film right now.
We are going to do a film right now. No, it's so true. I'm like, Aaron goes away for 2 days and I'm you know, pulling all the load. And then I'm looking at the Cleveland Indians baseball schedule to find out when I can get away for a couple of days.
That's Guardians, by the way.
Oh, that's right. It is. See, correct me. No, Cleveland Guardians are Pirates when I can get away for a night. But yeah, just to reinforce that, all the single parents that do it every day, my God, it is not easy. It is a job unto itself. And then working full time.
Yeah.
It is difficult. But Rob,
I've called in the grandmas. I've gone to
East. Are you banged out to Kingston, man? I was like, where are you? He was like, I've had enough.
Yeah.
I'm on my way to Kingston.
I took the kids. Also, just because I'm trying to keep the house clean, it was so much easier to just get them out.
And it's hard enough. And then you got to prepare for showings. You got people traipsing in. I know it was not a lot, but you were over at the house last week. You know, we did a little pizza and the kids out playing in the backyard, which is really good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just give you a little bit of a break.
My friend Lyndall did the same for me the other day. So I went to her place in the backyard and, you know, I'd take him to Eastside Mayo's for a little bada boom, bada bing. And then here's the other thing. When you're home alone and you're working all day, because I work at home, so like I have to race back home and get ready for work, I can't get to the grocery store. So I decide to use, Instacart. Now, usually Instacart's been pretty good, especially during the pandemic. It's costly. It's not really the money I want to blow, but sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And I needed groceries and I couldn't get out. So I order Instacart and the order that comes back is the most fucking bonkers order I've ever seen in my life. It is nowhere aligned with what I ordered. I ordered, and this is the thing, like this – This first one is my fault. I ordered bananas, and the way they do it, it's like it's the unit they're using is called CT. I'm like, I don't know what the fuck CT is. I
ordered, cubic tons.
Yeah, that's what I got. Fucking 3 cubic tons of bananas. This guy brought 5 fucking bushels of bananas. I had like 35 bananas to deal with. Okay, I brought a whole bushel to your house because I was like, here, just fucking take them. Like, what am I gonna do with these? Then I asked for like, then I asked for fucking smoked salmon. I get like Turkish salami. There was dog food in the order. I ordered a I ordered a box of cereal. He brought me 3 boxes of
cereal. Just want to check. You don't have a dog.
I don't have a dog. I don't have a dog. I asked for I get the wrong bagels. Like, and then the funny thing is, like, there was all these mistakes, a whole bunch of shit missing. I probably got someone else's order because I also got like those pellets that you put in the laundry machine, which I definitely did not order. But then I discover other like mistakes like 3 days later where I'm like, oh, if I'm going to cut a bagel and put on some cream cheese. Oh, no, that's fucking sour cream this guy bought me, not cream cheese. Just like things like that all week. I was like, what the fuck? Anyway, I did get my money back. So Instacart came through and making sure that, you know, I was a satisfied customer and all that. But holy shit, I was like, dude, I am home alone and I need these items in my home. I didn't have them. And
I can generally tell your frustration level based on your swear rate. 100%. You were going at a good swear rate clip. So yeah. I'm surprised they messed that up because in a digital world and you know, we've had 2 years to turn to like digitally ordering groceries. And that service was around like way before COVID. I'm surprised they messed it up. But when you're sick, you're moving kids around for show and you're doing all the heavy lifting and then you can't get a grocery order right. Come on, man. That's defeatist. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Cherry so on hopefully, top.
Exactly. Cherry on top. But, you know, hopefully, man, we can brighten up your day with the movie we're doing tonight. We are going to be looking at and doing a pod on the Ty West 2021. I don't want to say classic, but it might get there. X. What a film this was. We took a look at this one. Yeah, this is another in the long line of movies coming from A24 that have released Hereditary for Running Scared, soon to be released pod. If I can record that a year ago, it's not going to see the light of day.
Well, this, I think you echoed this. I was aware of its existence. But that's about it. Like, I came into this very, very cold. And in fact, we kind of added this pod on because of our schedules. We're like, oh, let's get this one in too. I was coming in super cold. I didn't watch the trailer. I've never read any reviews. And I didn't see any media about this going into it. So when you were like, let's watch it, I literally was like, I'll watch it tonight. And so I had no idea what I was getting into. And this was fucking really fun to go in super cold on.
Before we get into it, you want to step up and hit it out of the park for the one-line challenge?
All right. You're up first then.
Okay. Oh, I thought you were going to say go ahead.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
And begin.
X. Aspiring filmmaker. Young aspiring actors and actresses working in the porn film industry set out to a rural Texas town to change the video to home porn genre.
Oh, fuck.
Only to be announced. Oh, fuck. I'm totally fucking this up. Only to be stalked by 2 overage, sex crazed killers. X.
Overage.
Older.
That's a shot. That's a shot at the elderly community right there.
Oh my God. I actually, I've been thinking about this all morning.
See, I already think you're cheating by thinking about it. I go in this cold every time.
It's not possible to go into it. Your subconscious is already trying to formulate a synopsis for you. But anyways, all right, Rob, 3. Well, I'm not going to count you in.
Count me in.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
X. A group of young adults head out to the rural areas of Texas to find a discreet area to film a triple X porno that will go straight to video. But the location they choose turns out to be the last place they'll ever visit. Excellent.
Oh, that was good. You actually, you know what?
That was like a log line more than a
Yeah, that was actually really good. The last place they'll ever visit. Now, that doesn't count for everybody, but still, that's pretty good. One of the things that I want to start, for me, focusing in on with this one-line challenge is to actually keep it in one line.
I know, it's hard.
No, it's really hard because you have to figure out what are the key points and then also use commas appropriately and colons and lists. And we're not making use, grammatically, of lists. And I think we need to do that in order to get things.
Is that a line? Is a list part of a line? I guess. I mean, that seems
For sure it is. You throw a colon or a semicolon there, for sure.
Are we going to speak our grammar? Should we start
rural Texas, semicolon. I think we're taking things to unhealthy levels if we go there. But anyways, okay. So for the listeners that probably didn't get much off our one-line challenge, essentially what this is you've got a really driven film director in the porn industry that is can actually see the industry exploding, especially in the direct home video market. So what he does is he gets a group of actors and actresses together, and they truck on out to a, like you said in your one line segment there, a discreet location in Texas, and they've rented it off this really, really old, creepy couple that lives in the main house. And this film crew and these actors and actresses are in this kind of adjacent building that's got full kitchen, full bedroom. And that's where they're going to be filming the porno. And what ends up happening is there's a killing spree that takes place. And what makes this movie interesting is there's some really cool things that are happening as to actually why the killing takes place. And I think it goes a little bit above and beyond just sort of your classic slasher. And the characters had there was something about them, something you could sink your teeth into. And I think that's a good place to start when we actually take a look at the characters and we can introduce you to them one by one. And then I think that will color in a little bit more when we look at the film, some of the questions that we had, some of the themes that we saw in the film, Rob. So do you want to start us off with one of the characters?
Let's start with the main character, Maxine, because this is played by Mia Goth. She's going to be actually, to tell the truth, when I was watching this, I wasn't totally sure who the hero is going to be. And so, spoiler alert, Maxine is the so-called hero. She is an aspiring porn star, and she wants to be a star. She makes it very clear in the opening scene where we really meet her that she's aspiring for more than where she's come from. She wants to live lavishly, or at least comfortably. She wants to be a star. She wants people to know who she is. And yet there's right away, they introduce with her a contradiction where she hates it when these people stare at her. She doesn't like being stared at. And yet, her boyfriend, who is he's actually the producer. He's not the director.
That's Martin Henderson, Wayne.
Yes. Wayne, tells her right away, you better get used to that. If you're going to be a big star, this is going to be how it goes. Anyway, so she's an interesting character in the sense that there is that hesitancy. She's definitely using cocaine to power her confidence forward. But what's really interesting about Mia Goth in this one is that she's also playing Pearl. And Pearl is the elderly woman that we'll meet at the farm. And through a slow burn of events, we realize that Pearl is really on off her rocker. And at first it comes off as maybe, elderly. What's the word I'm looking for here?
I don't want to say because I don't want to make light of any of these diseases, but it's a bit of dementia or some kind of neurological imbalance.
She seems forgetful.
She's fucking crazy.
Well, she seems confused at first, and then she sort of oversteps her bounds, physically with Mia. And there's this really odd tension about how she sort of covets Mia's beauty. And is it just her beauty? What else do you think she covets, James?
I think she covets, I think it's not just her beauty, but it's also her youth. It's her, Pearl talks about how she was a dancer and she, in fact, after one of her killing scenes, it kind of shows her, it's really beautifully lit and she's all covered in blood and she starts to sort of do these dance moves, right? And I think what's interesting is that Maxine is a dancer. She's an exotic dancer. In fact, you've got the strip club, Girls, 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 right in Houston, where right in the first scene. So I think that there's a connection there between the two, perhaps kindred spirits. And I think it's reinforced. Like, I'm thinking that the director is, they've got the same actress playing the older, younger version. We talked about this off pod, right? They're really kind of taking a look at narcissism. You know, I think in an interesting way, in the sense that Mia is young and doesn't really come across as narcissistic, but is definitely overt in her sexuality. And then you've got Pearl, who I think at one point saw herself that way, but now craves to have what she doesn't have.
Yeah.
And connecting through the dance. And, you know, they also had that look right when they first got out of the car and or out of the van or truck or whatever. And then Maxine looks up to the window and it's like the classic window scene. You know, yeah. You see in every movie, like The Conjuring. It's like whenever somebody
I think Norman Bates Hotel, like
Grandma's. Oh yeah, exactly. And that is just, it's funny. Psycho's referenced a few times in this film. But you've got that look up to the top window, and that elevation creates like a power dynamic, and already that just kind of reinforces fear and tension. So I thought that was interesting. So I think you could probably draw a bunch of parallels, but you could definitely connect this character in a bunch of different ways.
And Pearl has, like, you know, this is the thing about the movie. There's so many themes about resentment and bitterness and sort of regrets about, you know, time lost and not being able to live the way you thought you were choosing to, or not being able to live the way you wanted to. And Maxine being the opposite, being like, not only am I going to live the way I want to, but I'm going to fight for it. Like, I deserve better. And I'm going to throw away all your stupid rules about sexuality, about drug use, about monogamy.
Yeah. Yeah. Not polygamy. Not sister wives.
No, still, who knows what she's into, but I'm just saying she's pushing the boundaries of all those things, or going beyond the bounds of those things. And, you know,
she also says that line.
She's empowered by it.
Yeah. I will not accept a life in which I do not deserve.
Yeah.
I will not accept a life I do not deserve.
I do not deserve.
Like, she has this mantra, which I think that's the thing that's being reinforced that we see on that TV throughout the film, right? But she's just constantly saying that to herself.
Yeah.
And again, as a means to kind of just really kind of reinforce and show her her confidence in what she wants.
And as a viewer, you want to believe her, but the next character, Wayne, who's her boyfriend, Martin Henderson, does cast a little doubt on that, because he is so perfectly cast, by the way. Martin Henderson is fantastic in this role.
Did he not seem like kind of like a poor man's Matthew McConaughey? Like, he was channeling.
Oh, I was going Kurt Russell, like 70s Kurt Russell. He's got a real, yeah, like,
this. I think you could have seen any of those three characters. I don't know. It was just McConaughey. I think I caught him from, like, right in one of the first scenes, just the side. He's got the aviators on, he's got the Stetson, he's got the great tan, about the same height, and just that little bit of that Southern drawl, I thought was good.
And he's like this, he's kind of a cocky idiot, as you described to me off pod. He's the producer of the film, of the porn video they're making. He's just full of, like, one-liners, and, like, he's got all these business plans that haven't come through yet, but this is going to be the big one. And yeah, like, he's just like, he makes you think, I don't know if she's in with the right guy here, because he says he loves her, and, like, you know, and he's, but at the same time, you could tell he's a bit of a, not a pimp, but what's the word here? He's a bit of a.
You almost want to say, like, he's exploiting his girlfriend, because they're by all accounts,
not just girlfriend, they're fiancés.
Yeah, they're together, right? One of the things they do is really delineate between the work and the play, you know, like,
right,
professional life and personal life. And he definitely is a big proponent of that. But he's good, man. He dies in a rough way.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a rough way, man. Home Alone style. Home Alone style, nail in the foot. And then he's
that's
all
exactly,
like,
what I was thinking.
Oh my God, I saw it coming. I'm like, but that's, you know what I mean? That's just like, that's movie making. It's like, they're in a massive barn. Rob, they're in a huge barn. And where does he step? He steps on the one little piece of wood that's got, like, the 2-inch nail sticking up, and then his drops to the ground. And what's really great, there's the barn doors and there's these holes. And what he does is he sees somebody walk past it, because the light sort of changes, right? And it goes from darker and then lights up, almost like somebody moved out of the way to get the moonlight in. And what he does, and I could just see it happening. He gets his head right up against, and he's looking through the holes.
And remember, he's looking for somebody.
He's looking for somebody. He goes to the second hole. He goes to the third hole. Bam. Pitchfork spikes right in the eyes. And it's not a quick one. They go in, and then it holds. And the actually camera goes away and then comes back.
Yeah.
Like it cuts to another scene.
Which is interesting. I never seen that done before.
No. Normally you would just see the kill kind of done, the guy dropped to the ground, and then away you go. But what's really cool is it cuts to another scene, and then it comes back to the scene in the barn, and they pull the pitchfork out, and then he drops. And then it stays looking at from the back, looking at where he was just killed. And then what you see cast upon the big barn door is a shadow with a pitchfork coming through.
Which looks like the devil, eh? It's like the old school, it's the devil with like a little pointy tail, like that kind of devil.
Yeah, it's effective, right? It's effective in fear and there's no tension, but it's just like, well, there's a bit of tension. It's just fear and scary and disturbing. And then it gets bigger, and then you see Pearl walk in the scene, and then she just starts putting hay on him, right?
Like she's gonna, I love that scene, because doesn't it look like your grandma out shoveling the driveway? Like she just like sticks the fork in him one more time to check if he's dead.
Like I know,
which is what you should do in a horror movie.
Like she's
just like, let's see, is this guy dead? Yeah, he's pretty dead. Just pulls it out and starts shoveling hay on him.
Yeah, and she's like 100 pounds soaking wet. So,
and let's see the thing. Like, before we even get too deep with the other characters, we should talk about Pearl and her husband Howard, because we've talked that they are these old people, but they're not just like old, Jamie. They are like, they look like 100 years old.
But she's an old lady. I mean, look at her. She's old. She's too old,
right?
What's his name?
They're both young actors. They're not actually old people, right? They are not elderly people.
No. They're young people, and I think the practical effect, like makeup work, was done well there.
It looks good. It's a lot of prosthetics.
But
they look repulsive. They've done a job here to make these elderly people look really gross.
I feel like it's unfair.
Me too. You know? This is what I'm getting driving to. Like here, like. Why is like, okay, I know we're going to reveal that they are the villains later on, or like when we get there. But when we first meet them, I'm like, boy, they're really making these guys look rough. Like, why is every hillbilly in every movie you ever see, why do they always have like terrible untreated skin problems?
I think it's also, you know, I think it's probably a little bit of like media driven, you know, they're down in Texas. They're like these kind of gun-toting. Like the first thing he does is stick a shotgun in the guy's face, right? So that just drives into some of those Southern Texas stereotypes. And he is old. It would make you think he's probably been a farmer. He's been out in the sun, and his skin is a reflection of just the life that he's lived. To me, that's the first thing that I thought. But he walks out, and Jackson Hole, played by Kid Cudi, just goes, yeah. Listen, isn't that an ugly motherfucker over there?
Yeah, like it's the first thing he says.
First thing he says, yo, man, this guy's an ugly motherfucker.
It's exactly what the audience is thinking, which is great.
Yeah, exactly. So, but they, you know, he's concerned about her right from the start, because he asks and he makes mention of, my wife is not been well.
Yeah.
My wife. It's interesting.
Some good scripting there, because you don't know that Howard's bad for a long time. You're not sure if he's actually genuinely just trying to help her.
And you know what? To me, I feel like it can go one of two directions. Either it was all just a ruse from the beginning, or he knows what's about to happen, and he's clearly going to be with her, and he's going to be there to clean up the mess. But he doesn't want it to go to another killing spree, because this is revealed later on in the film. This is not the first time that's happened.
Yeah.
You know, they've had people renting out this facility, but like facility, listen to me, man, fuck facility.
It's like they've been cottage.
People renting out this cottage, this apartment, and they've killed other people, because I think it starts to entice Pearl for her proclivities. And, you know, we'll talk about that afterwards, but you're unsure what is going on. And I think that there's probably a couple of moments where he knows what's what, like, especially when they, you know, Pearl makes contact with Maxime, brings him in with the lemonade. And then Howard sees that somebody's been in the house, and then they've had a drink, and maybe everything's about to kick off again. But they are portrayed as like kind of nasty, man. Like, you know, like, especially because it's a sexual film and there's a whole undercurrent of that. And she's at times,
She's inappropriate.
She's inappropriate. She's not only touching the people that have moved in, she's trying to touch her husband. She's trying to get up on him. And he's right. No, my heart.
Well, that's what drives
my heart medication.
And that's what makes it a bit sad for me, because in large it's being like, I have so much empathy for these two. Cause I'm like, first of all, I feel almost bad that like elderly sex is represented in this gross way.
Okay, let's come back to that afterwards.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
Because let's come back to that.
That's a whole topic right there.
That's a whole topic, because
let's finish up with the couples.
Yeah, that draws into question the idea of, do you feel sorry for these people or not? And yeah. I feel like that's always in the back of your mind. So anyways, you got Howard and Pearl. We've talked about Maxine and Wayne. We've got four characters left. Let's look at one of my favorite characters. I think she makes the film is Brittany Snow and Bobby Lynn.
Play Bobby Lynn. Yeah, she's great.
Oh, she's so fun. She's got like the Marilyn Monroe blonde curl. She's got like the halter dress that's tied up around her neck. She's got like the charm, but also like the quick wit and snappiness.
Yeah.
Really fun. And she's quite sexy too. Like she's the lead, right? She's the main lead in the porn movie.
And she makes the joke in the van about her tits. And then immediately like the church mouse, as we will later describe her as the other character, who is Lorraine, you know, kind of reacts without saying anything. And right away she catches that, and Bobby Lane catches that and just like continues on with her. Like, look, like I know what I got here. Like I got this great body, and so I'm going to help maintain it, and I'm going to make my money off this. Like I forget exactly what she says, but she's basically saying like, I know I got something good here, and I'm not going to like throw it away. Like I've got an opportunity because of this, and I'm going to make the best of my life with this.
She's unapologetic and exactly. She's unashamed and she's an empowered woman. She's confident. She's sure of herself.
Yeah, and she's not stupid. Like she's not like
no.
she's not added to the movie to be the tits and dumb, right? Like she's not at all. And she's dating Jackson Hole, who's played by Kid Cudi, as we mentioned.
Sorry, can you say that again?
Jackson Hole. That's a great porn name, by the way. And he's like the male lead. He's an African American man, and we learned about him that he was a two-time two tours of Vietnam.
Yeah, Vietnam.
And he's a Marine. Well, the other thing about him is that he is very much put in the role of the porn movie he's in as like the typical blaxploitation hero who's going to like,
yeah.
He's going to use his like his fists, his wits, and his dick to get out of any situation. And actually he's very helpful to Howard when it seems like he's in dire need.
I actually don't feel like, you know, I feel like in the role in the movie, he was sort of cast into the black stereotypes, but him as an actual character.
Yeah.
I felt like he offered something different. He was really genuine, and not to say black characters aren't genuine, but it felt different. It felt refreshing. It felt good. I loved him as a character. I thought he was really good. He fit nicely. He had really good chemistry with Bobby Lynn, and he had good chemistry with the rest of the cast.
And so that's what they're filming, is this porn called The Farmer's Daughter. And it's the typical story of guy breaks down the road, meets the three farmer's daughters.
Well, daddy's not home.
Yeah, daddy's not home. There's only going to be two at first, and he fucks them both. That's Maxine and Bobby Lynn. But then RJ, who's the director and cameraman, he has brought his girlfriend, Lorraine, who they nicknamed Church Mouse because she doesn't say much. She's very shy, and she's there to be the boom operator. But halfway through the film, she reveals that she's a cool character, because in that discussion they're having after their first day of shooting, they're smoking weed, they're having a beer, they're all cheersing about the life that they want to lead. And she actually questions it. She's like, well, I'm not sure if I agree with all that. And they get into some debates about, you know, where they stand on these positions. And even at the end, she says, I don't know if I agree with all of this. But then she says, but I want to be in the movie. And this is the big thing that throws RJ off.
Yeah.
Who is before preaching how this is going to be an artful film. And like, he calls her prude at one point for not... you know, for like, she's like, why are we doing a porn film? I thought you wanted to make real films. He's like, because it can be a real film. And he's being
exactly. He's on that long line of directors trying to make porn movies.
Yeah. And so she throws it back at him. She's like, well, why are you being so prude? After the, you know, this is just for the movie. It's not about our relationship. And he can't handle it, but they go forward with it anyway. And she uses Psycho as an example when she's saying to him, like, well, what about like the difference between film and reality? Like films sometimes change on the spot. Like Psycho changed mid filming. Why can't we do that? And he's like, well, that's a different type of movie. That's a horror movie. So right after this is done, RJ is like having this existential, like, oh my God, what have I done? I've let my girlfriend get fucked on camera. And he goes in the shower and I was like, oh shit, Pearl's going to get him in the shower. I was so convinced.
We should mention that it's Jenna Ortega from Scream. She dies rough. And actually, to me, one of the most squeamish parts in the film has to do with her. But one of the things that I actually am going to critique, and while we're on her as a character, is I found it a little bit unbelievable because you're right. She starts to question maybe her own life and she wants to be in the movie. She's maybe enticed by this sort of freedom of expression.
Well, she's aroused when she's aroused. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. For sure. We can use that word. Right? She wants to be involved. However, and then next thing she wakes up, she knows she's pissed her boyfriend off. And she was very, because she's questioned by RJ at this point. And then she becomes, if you go back and watch the film, she becomes very defiant. She becomes very like not nice to him. Okay. Let's just use that word. She's not nice to him. And then she wakes up the next day or in the middle of the night, because this movie takes place over a 24-hour period, and he's not in the bed. And all of a sudden she flips a switch and she's like very concerned, and you know, it's the only thing on her mind. And I was thinking to myself, well, you were just like not very nice to this guy.
Yeah. But you never had a fight with your girlfriend and then the next day or your wife, and you're like,
it just seemed very convenient, Rob. That's all I'm saying it's just a natural scope of emotion, a national sort of gamut that you go through with your emotions. Yeah, but there's a difference between
angry about an issue versus angry about the relationship. Like you.
Yeah, hold on. She was angry because he was basically questioning her ability to make decisions for herself. And
yeah, that's why she was defiant.
Yeah, but I feel like that anger would hold over, you know. That defiance didn't even last through the night. And I thought that it was, to me, too convenient of a 180 for her just to kind of be like the concerned girlfriend after. I'm not saying you can't do that. I'm just saying, to me, it was a bit of a stretch in the way that I saw it portrayed on film. Maybe I'm being overly critical.
Well, he's missing from a place they've never been to in the middle of the night.
He could be out for a smoke, man. He could be out for a walk. Maybe had a fight with his girlfriend.
Okay,
he could be
but in a movie, they're not going to. In a movie, they're not going to show you the 30 minutes she lied there wondering where he was. They're just going to show you the 5 seconds before she decided to go looking for him, right?
Okay, well, we can agree to disagree there.
I'm just saying, it's like there's people who say, like, how come in video games you can never go, they never take the character to the bathroom? It's like, because nobody fucking wants to see that.
Well, she ends up, anyways.
That one's for Nick Andrade.
What is it? Autosave.
Yeah, yeah.
Take a listen. Autosave podcast on the Stringer Labs.
Yeah.
Okay, so she starts looking, and essentially when they get up at night, it kicks off the kind of killing spree. RJ's the first one to get. We'll get him in a second. But she actually is one of the ones that gets, the only one that gets caught, and then she is she's locked down in the basement.
Yeah, and the difference is she's Howard's victim, not Pearl's.
She's Howard's victim, yeah. And she actually tries to you think they're outside of the house, and she tries to unlock the door to get up from the basement cellar. And then he comes in with the butt end of the rifle and just destroys her hand. Doesn't shoot her. It'd be better if he shot her. He takes the butt end and he like breaks her fingers and like totally goes to town. Her hand's all mangled. I'm like, oh my God, that would have fucking hurt, man. Like, yeah. Just and she pulls it back and she's like,
but she pulls it back after being hit 3 times. That's the part that I was like, that's a little weird.
No, but
I get hit once, I retract it completely.
Yeah, but I think because her hand was through that small little, that little axe hole, like she'd taken out one of the side panels in the thing. I think she tried and she couldn't get it out, and it was, and then he just kept rifling away. Anyways, she is in a state of, she's in shock and she's hysterical. And she doesn't even know what the hell's going on.
And she discovers the other body of someone from a previous visit.
Yeah.
Down there chained up in the basement. That's where she's the one who cues in like, whoa, something is really wrong in this place.
Yeah, exactly. This guy's chained up. He's got his pants around his ankles. It's like, yeah, these people aren't normal. So
a lot of dicks in this movie, James.
A lot of sex, dicks, ass, tits, everything. It's good. Taking a look at the characters now, let's take a look at some of the kind of questions and themes that, you know, or some of our perspectives with it, right? Some questions that emerge that we can discuss. You guys that are listening can chime in, send us an email, let us know what's going on. And then just some of the underlying themes that emerge in this film. And my first one was, you know, this is a slasher film, but this is a new slasher film. And really, what do we want out of our new slasher films to keep them fresh, to keep us engaged as viewers? Because Rob and I don't think this is any surprise. We both really like this movie. And you don't have those crazy twists and the dark dread of the Hereditaries or other, you know, some the paranormal aspects of the Conjuring. It's just you have some crazy people killing other people. So what is it about this film that reinvigorates the idea of the slasher film and makes it a really quality contemporary piece?
You wrote this down. I've been struggling with the question because, frankly, it is very set up and executes very much like a typical slasher. So the two things that pop into my mind is, A, the filmmaking is totally elevated from the stuff we're used to from the 80s and 90s, right?
Okay, it's for sure.
The filmmaking is way better. The acting is way better. Interesting camera angles, gorgeous compositions. The alligator scene is fucking beautiful. Like the first time we encounter the alligator, when Maxime is up floating in the water and we see it enter the water and we see it start swimming toward her. Just by chance, she decides to go in towards the dock and it's just getting closer to her and it's an aerial shot and it's a beautiful composition. You're just watching, like, it's like a Frogger game. Like you're like, oh boy, it's getting closer. It's getting closer. Shots like that are beautiful. But I guess the thing for me, like, it clings to a central theme really, really well, which I think sometimes other slashers kind of just don't worry about. Whereas this one really has a tight narrative and central theme it's working on.
Yeah.
The other one to me is, though, like, I was, because it's a new age film, I kind of expected a twist, or I was left in doubt so often. And I think this film plays with that very well, because it's like we keep saying, like, was Howard in on it or not? At what point do we think Howard was in on it? Was he in it from the beginning, or is he sort of adapting as it goes, as Pearl gets more and more unhinged or becomes more and more violent? I was never sure. And I was even at one point in my head, I might as well reveal it now. I had this question in my head. I'm like, are they going to reveal that they're not the killers? Because they're setting them up to be the killers. And then, like, what if it's going to turn out to be Church Mouse? It's just going to turn on everyone. Like, I was actually a little bit like, maybe this is going to pivot. But I don't know if that's enough to say that it creates a new step in the genre. What about you, James?
I actually think that would have been a misstep. I think that would have been taking something that is set up beautifully for all the reasons that you just mentioned in terms of the filmmaking, and then put in like an unnecessary twist or things that aren't believable, and trying to make things clever and trying to make things, you know, work in ways that they don't really need to work for them to be for them to be all they can be. I think to the sort of linear aspect of like old slasher films, I think of Halloween, you know, that's an amazing film. That is a little bit more theme driven when you actually kind of get into the family dynamic of it. But I was looking at old Friday the 13th films, and often it's set up in the same way. You know, there's like somebody going after them. There's a group of people. But the conversations they have generally are very kind of on the surface. There's not a whole lot happening with the development of the characters. And I think the performances are great, but also because this is more theme driven, when they talk about age, they talk about life, they talk about their own futures, they talk about their own wants and aspirations, right? And, you know, I think that allows the characters some room to breathe. So you're more invested in the characters. You're more interested in what happens. So I think that's, for me, that's one of the things. Performances are great. It's very theme driven. I love the characters. And also there's some new and interesting ways that these guys die. Like the killers are just, you're right, there's no twist, right? There's no twist, but these killers are methodical. They set the pieces in place in order for these unsuspecting kids to die how they want to. There's nothing to subvert just the classic slasher film here, but there's just all these other great pieces of filmmaking, of storytelling, of character development, and it being very realistic, which was one of my critiques with Scream. Like, we fucking took that hospital scene to the woodshed, you know what I mean? Because it was just like so stupid. But this film, Rob, was there any, you know, I'm talking a little bit here, but was there any part in this film? We know that there's people killing other people, but did anything seem like completely unreasonable or like it couldn't happen? To me, this seemed actually quite reasonable, you know? Within the scope of a film.
Yeah, no, that's like too crazy. I mean,
no, nothing too crazy.
The fact that these people exist is a little bit well, the first part you have to buy into. But
yeah, yeah.
It's possible. And I think what you're saying is right. Like the elements of the slasher are all the same, but they've really massaged each element to sing at its perfect, like in a very beautiful harmony. Because like you made a note in our document that we always refer to while we're potting here, how the film builds dread and tension a long ways before the jump scares even begin. And then before the violence even begins. And like you get to know the people, you feel like you know them before, but all these creepy little things start to happen. And some of them are really unsettling, like the scene between Maxine and Pearl, the very first scene where Pearl actually reaches over and touches her midsection. Yeah. And you're like, it's not really a big deal, but at the same time, it's like, whoa, that's a weird violation of my personal space. And like, what the hell do you think you're doing? So it's pretty often that the villain covets the victim or in this case, who's going to become the hero, but it's just the way it's done. And for the reasons it's done, like why Pearl is so attracted to Maxine is so unique. It's an interesting, it's a new thing I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, no, they, like you said in the, you said it right there. The first kill is like 55 minutes into the movie. This is a hot 146 on the whole thing. So you're more than halfway through, or you're close to halfway through the film before anybody even dies. And then there's a nice, easy pace. You go back to other slasher films, somebody dies in the first fucking 10 minutes. In fact, the opening scene often is a kill.
To be fair, though, this movie does tell you where it's going with the opening scene.
Some fucked up horror film. What's on that camera? Some fucked up horror film, for sure. So you definitely, yeah, you see what's going on, 24-hour period. And also, the tropes are cranked up to 11. That was what you wrote there. That made a whole lot of sense. Like, you know what I mean? Sex is danger. Going out on your own is danger. But these things are just completely under the microscope in this film. And I love how they took sex, not only as a sin, as cause for being killed, but just the premise of the whole fucking film. Yes. I thought that was so brilliant. I think, you know, for what we want out of a new slasher film, this is sort of a gold standard as to how you could kind of take that idea that's been around for decades and reinvigorate it with something interesting. Don't try to be different. Just make it your own, make it cool, as they all say at A24. We want shit that's cool. And then just be pay attention to the details, focus on the performances, build the dread, build the tension, right? Are there any other sort of, you know, that idea of a slasher film, but one of the big themes in this film is the idea of age and mm-hmm. getting older and, you know, how we normalize elderly people, senior citizens, or in this film sort of maybe, or even how they see themselves. How do you think this movie, how does this movie do at portraying the idea of age and getting old?
Yeah. So like, it's a struggle, right? Because part of you is like, if you're talking about this from a representation angle, it's always like, oh, but we're representing elderly as such horrible people and so gross. I think I'm going to give it a pass on this one in the sense that like they're establishing them as the villains. But the part for me is like the fact that their sex life is used to repulse us as well. And I know that's the kink of these particular killers, but there's something a little bit I don't know, something a little bit, I feel sad for them a little bit. Like they both desire each other still at their old age. I mean, really, this movie is about an elderly couple, you know, reconciling, coming back together again. And, you know, they're reconnecting after all these years and we should applaud them for it. I mean, the fact that it takes 8 bodies to make it happen is the problem.
They finally reconcile. Yeah. Like, you know, if you were just to – sorry, go on, Rob. I don't want to –
Well, they're, like they're reconnecting sexually, which they struggled with because Howard has a heart problem and Pearl is still has a sexual appetite, and applaud them for that, for their age. But, you know, killing people and using their bodies for sex maybe is not the way to do it. But, yeah, so it's a real struggle for me because I'm like – I kind of love the idea. I think it's a really good idea. They made it super creepy and uncomfortable and gross. But it makes me feel bad that like the rare time that we see elderly sexuality represented on film, now it's been turned into this monstrous, really awful thing when it shouldn't be.
I know you're going to be missing me when you got that big, white, wrinkly body on top of you with this loose skin and old balls. Gross.
I find sex in this film, it's what's I thought was clever was that it was used as a motive to kill, but in the end was the killer's downfall. Because he has sex and then, you know,
doesn't get the heart attack, doesn't die.
He doesn't get the heart attack, but I think it probably set the wheels in motion because I can't remember what happened. He's trying to pull the body and then he has the heart attack, right?
Yeah, well, he shot Lorraine as she ran out the building.
Yeah.
And then as he's pulling her body into the house, she reawakens briefly.
She's having, she looks.
Oh, yeah, and then it scares him. Yeah,
it scares him and he has a heart attack.
I wonder if
what a great death.
Yeah, it was a great death. I wonder if we're not supposed to put together, like, he didn't have the heart attack during sex, but maybe that kind of elevated, like, everything in his body.
Yep,
and then the scare was the final one. So I found that's kind of interesting. But it's
good script writing.
Yeah, really good script writing. They do reconcile. Like, clearly they're crazy because it takes, like you said, eight bodies for them to
It manifests as violence.
It manifests as violence, right? Just her disgust and her contempt and her sadness at her own aging, right? She's looking at herself. There's really like an internal look for Pearl. Yeah. And when she sees these young kids, right, it just angers her, especially when because
that they have something that she doesn't.
Of course, because the timeline is when the kids come and then she definitely, like you see her putting her makeup on because she's been reinvigorated by these young people. And then she approaches Howard. Really, it was Howard that sets the killing off. When he rebukes her.
Right.
When he
says,
I can't, my heart.
Yeah.
But like, they're also, Rob, they're probably also like 95 years old, right?
Oh, I know. They look like they're 140 years old. They look awful.
Think about your own sex life with young children, you know what I mean? And like, as you get busier and as you get tired. Now, add on 50 years, you know what I mean? It's like.
But we've normalized that. We've normalized our society that like, oh, you get old and sex doesn't become, you don't have to worry about sex anymore. It goes away. You shouldn't have sexual thoughts. You shouldn't have sexual motivation anymore. And I think that's incorrect. Like there are old people, like what was it like in the 90s? I remember hearing this or in the 2000s, like Florida had the highest STD rate at one point because all the old people were fucking without condoms.
I think it was in the Villages. It was Trump land.
Well, retirement communities where people thought, oh, we don't need to wear domes anymore because like we're not getting pregnant, so don't worry about it.
This is what makes them crazy is that like Howard and Pearl is that it's not like Wayne's an asshole, but an indictment of youth. In fact, Maxine takes the time to go in and sit down and have lemonade. Like she's not. Yeah. She's a good person.
Jackson Hole tries to help Howard.
Jackson Hole has
what's her name?
Bobby Lynn.
Bobby Lynn tries to help Pearl when she sees her at the dock.
They're good people. It's not like they're – some of the Friday the 13th, you got these young kids and they're fucking smoking bongs and they're laughing at everybody and they're like pissing on this side of the street. In fact, I feel like this movie is a pro-porn industry movie because the way that the characters working in the porn industry are portrayed I think is mostly in a positive light. These are good people. They just want to kill them. They just want to fucking Pearl is in fact the first death. My God. You know, that guy's a little bit of a wiener. I think he needed to go anyways, but she's like, are you okay? And then there's the pause. That's what builds like the good tension. And then she just gets left-handed, by the way, left-handed into the right side of the neck.
Well, but hold on. First, she does a little dance with him.
Oh.
And he's like, why? And then she tries to kiss him. Like they're like slow dancing. He's like, what's going on?
Okay,
and then she tries to kiss him. And he's like, why did you do that?
Yeah, why did you fucking try to kiss me, man? Your husband's inside. Boom. Yeah.
And she hacks his whole head off though at the end, right? She keeps hacking him. Oh.
That was a little bit too Black Swan for me. That was a little bit too where she stands up and there's the truck in the background and she's just like basically decapitated him. And then she puts her hand and she's starting to do the dance.
Yeah.
It went on too long. You know what I mean?
I liked it. Cause like, it was also that they were playing that song in the background in the truck. What's the song? It's a classic, 70s rock song. Do, 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 do. Oh, it's the cowbell song that Will Ferrell plays the cowbell on.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
Anyway, it cuts to the song she's hearing in her head as she's dancing. It was just a really interesting filmmaking moment, just like a weird choice that I just appreciated.
Well, the director liked it because he let it go. Like that scene after she's done, she stands up and then she's backlit by the lights of the truck and then she's all in red and she puts her arm. That scene, clearly he wanted to really frame that up as something to remember because he let it go for over a minute. All right, if we take a look at some of the kills, we have Bobby Lynn, we have Pearl, and we have, I'm going to take a look at Jackson Hole's really quickly. So Jackson Hole is, I think, approached by Howard, or there's somebody walking towards the house and he says, is everything okay? And anyways, they go on a search party because they're looking for Pearl. The search leads them down to the banks of like the marsh. So it's been established that there's like a freshwater pond or a lake.
It's like a bayou.
Well, it's like a bayou, right? It makes me think of kind of what he'd be like in Vietnam. He seems very at it in his element, right? And he goes miss or sir, or whatever, because he sees a flashlight in the water.
Yeah, he's worried that Howard's fallen in.
He's worried he's fallen in and he's into like his waist deep in water. I was like, for sure. This is the alligator scene, for sure. It's set up perfectly because it was foreshadowed at the beginning of the film. It's established that there's alligators in this, and they're big, and they're not afraid to go after humans, right? Clearly, they've been maybe munching on humans before based on Pearl and Howard's work. So he's in there. He gets a flashlight, and I'm waiting for it to happen, but then it doesn't. It doesn't. It subverts that alligator attack. And then you kind of release a little bit. Then he sees Howard. And then, completely out of shock, Howard just blows a hole in his, just basically shoots him at point blank range with a 12 gauge shotgun. And I was not expecting that at all.
Because they also made you think the shotgun wasn't necessarily loaded.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought that was really good with the way they set up that death. So that's the perfect segue into Bobby Lynn. You want to take it from here?
So Bobby Lynn, now looking for Jackson, goes out, sees Pearl is down at the dock. So she goes down to the bayou. Now, this is a while now. So Jackson's gone, Howard's gone, but Pearl is there. And she says, oh, you know, my Nana gets confused sometimes too, my auntie. So, you know, I've kind of done this before. Like, come with me here. Let me put this over you. Because Pearl's standing there naked. So Bobby Lynn puts her like sweater over her, blanket over her. And she's trying to get her to like go back to the shore and walk back to the house. And Pearl just starts giving her shit, like calls her a whore or something nasty like that. And I love how quickly actress Brittany Snow, Bobby Lynn, turns back on Pearl like, well, okay, now that's enough of that, old lady. Like, yeah. I'm here trying to help you, so don't fucking give me that shit. And then Pearl pushes her into the water, and very quickly the gator's there and gets her. And it's gross, like right on the head and neck.
Oh, my God. It's just she jumps in, and she just stands up, and she's like, well, what the hell? Boom. And the thing just comes from the side and then right into the alligator death roll.
Was that the one?
You know I don't like bones.
Like you see it. It's just, oh my God. She's screaming for about 3 seconds and then she stops. You see her arm or leg break because you can see how it's being, her body's being contorted all around. Like Rob, by all accounts, one of the worst ways to die.
Yeah.
Can you think of a different way to fucking die?
I don't want to, but yeah, that one's pretty nasty. Ugh. Don't fuck with alligators, people. They're old as dinosaurs, aren't they? Or is that crocodiles?
Well, they were from that time, eh? Yeah. They were from that time.
They've seen some shit. All right.
They made it. Okay, so let me just – you take the Pearl's death, but okay. I want to take the Pearl most fucked up moment.
Okay. I'll take Pearl death. You take Pearl fucked up moment.
So one of the most fucked up parts in this movie is – basically, after killing has already been done, Pearl is able to get into the cottage that they're staying in. And
I mean, she's stealth. She moves at like 2 kilometers, two miles an hour. She's like creeping along real slow, barely swinging her arms. She gets everywhere. Nobody even knows she's right behind you.
I love everybody in Hamilton. But if in Hamilton, she would be having a fucking Momo scooter. She'd be on a scooter, man. Like she'd be – some of these – dude, these scooters are decked out like – everything you would want on that, like double basket, side carriage, Canadian flag, tin cans, like everything that I've seen. These things go quick. There's no restrictor plate on these Momo scooters, eh? In fact, here's the problem. These things go fast. And they ride them on the sidewalks. Like in Hamilton, they're like, you can get these babies up to like 45 kilometers an hour. These things are so fast. Yeah. Anyways, she's very stealth. And in a crazy moment, after she's already been perpetrating killings, and we've already established her connection to Maxine, right? And it's already played by the same character, but she's targeted her as like, I think she sees her as her former self, or at least a version of it. She sneaks into the bed. She takes off her nightie and she basically starts rubbing her back and is looking for, I don't think sex, but definitely closeness, definitely a connection.
She's pretty good there. Yeah, it's not quite clear where that hand goes. I'm serious.
Get the Rob. I'm just saying,
dude, doesn't Maxine moan a couple times in this?
Oh,
or is that supposed to be Pearl moaning?
I think she's looking for some kind of connection, some kind of closeness, some kind of something. She wants to feel something. Now, to what extent she wants to feel it is.
A bean.
Anyways, Maxine wakes up. Like, there's a couple of really good screams in this movie, right? Lorraine screams when she, I think, what is it? She goes down, she sees the guy hanging up, and she freaks out. And then also when Maxine sees that, like, her, imagine doing that, opening up your eyes and then seeing Pearl fucking 4 inches away from your face, like 95-year-old woman who's just scooted down from the main house. It's like
slipped into your bed.
Oh my God. She freaks out. Is the same bed where the two of them get down, combined age 200 in about 10 minutes. But anyways, yeah, Pearl is like, what is Chappelle? She's a habitual line crosser.
So he would step across the line. Habitually, he's a habitual line stepper.
She's crossing lines. Anyways, she gets it. How does she get it, Rob?
Oh man, so this is great. So Howard has gone down with his heart attack, and now she's concerned for Howard. And this is when Maxine's like, all right, she comes out with her handgun. She's ready to pop Pearl in the head. And she's like, give me the keys to the fucking truck. She gets the keys, comes back. And I forget what the argument is, but Maxine's like, that's it. And she just starts pulling the trigger. But unlike Howard, Wayne actually does keep his gun empty and nothing happens.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So Pearl reaches over, picks up the shotgun, and she's like, about to blow a hole right in Maxine's head, but Maxine dodges, and the kickback of the shotgun throws Pearl out the door.
It threw her like 25 feet back.
Yeah, like off the deck. Boom. And she lands like, and she literally says, my hip. It's straight out of like the commercial.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
We should laugh at that, but it's like when me and you were growing up, it's like the medic alert. That's all it was. We saw that commercial repeatedly.
Kids would repeat that line all the time. And so Maxine gets into the old school vintage truck and just fucking backs over Pearl's head and then puts it in drive and drives over her head again.
Oh my God, I know. And it's funny.
Bits are just spitting up everywhere. It was nasty.
So this cat just use some classic foreshadowing, classic, not literary devices, but classic devices. So this one, when he rolls over her head and then back over it, it's completely foreshadowed from the first scene in the movie when the truck rolls through the cow's blood and guts and intestine. Yeah. Like, Rob, can we just get some filmmakers that can just do these things on a consistent basis in some other movies and not try to make everything so fucking complicated?
Well, I think like, this is hard to write a good script like this. I think when you make these threads, they have to pay off. And this is great script writing. Like you're right. The cow, them running over the guts of the cow, when we saw earlier in the film, the cow gets hit by a car or has been hit and they're going by it on the other lane, but a bunch of the guts are still in the lane. So when their car drives by, you know, they get some of it on the wheel. That now is repeated at the end of this film. It's really nice symmetry. Like it is.
And I guess when it's done well, it's easy to spot and it just feels easy, right?
It feels good. So Jamie, though, one thing I want to ask you before we pivot to one more thing here at the end is what did you feel about, like, to me, this film really had a certain tone and then the kills started piling up and there was a comic effect that started to kick in that I didn't feel for most of the movie. I definitely felt it like a natural comic effect, like between characters making jokes, and that's funny. But now the film itself started to become funny, and that was like the sex scene between Howard and Pearl and Maxine's under the bed, which is just like a super uncomfortable, feels like a teenage thing. Like, uh-oh, I've been stuck in the bed next to Jamie and that girl from France and they're fucking for 6 hours. That is a callback to see if Owen knows what I'm talking about. Anyway, so like,
oh my god, I was like, where are you going with this, man? That's like, I can't let my wife listen to this.
It goes back to 1998.
Night in Paris, man. Yeah, can we do a jogcast on that?
I think there's a film called A Night in Paris, and it's also a triple X film. So that, it's that uncomfort comedy, right? And then, but the tone of the movie is still using all of its sound design, which is fucking brilliant, by the way. I think the sound design of this is amazing. But then, like, it's still using all its creepy techniques, and it's not hitting for me because I'm like, this is too funny to be creepy. And then the next couple deaths are so funny too. Like, I found the deaths became a little bit comical too.
Okay, okay.
Which I liked, but I'm also like, does that betray the tone that they'd already established, or – is that fine because we're working in the slasher genre where that kind of is part of it too?
I'm going to give the director and everybody, you know, behind the camera on this film some rope. I did. You kind of start to feel like it's getting into not Evil Dead territory, but just especially when you see Lorraine and like the teeth, eh? Like you see her, half her head's blown off in the teeth, and then she kind of coughs. She's got that little scare. Yeah. And then with the it starts with like the alligator, because RJ's death is, and there's nothing comedic about that. No. The guy gets it properly, right? And then, you know, with the alligator, and then with the kickback with Pearl with the shotgun, and then with going over the head. Yeah, it's like definitely there's some hyperbole there for sure. But I feel like it's not too outlandish, and the film had done such a good job of just setting up just how creepy the whole effect was. Because
Unique deaths are hard to do. I mean, they've all been done.
For sure. And it is a slasher genre. So, you know, we're not talking, we'll talk about this in, I think, in a week or two with our boy Ari Fleeman, but this is not Chopping Mall. It's not like the most ridiculous fucking Short Circuit, Total Recall, door closing mall shit that, you know what I mean? It's just, there's some stuff that's just exaggerated a little bit, but I think it's okay. But you know, now that you kind of draw my attention to it, maybe it could have been scaled back a little bit, but I feel like there's enough in the beginning of the film of like that dread creation, the creepiness, to allow it to allow some of the more exaggerated killings to pay off near at the end.
Yeah.
There's a reveal at the end of this film. What do you think the role of religion is here? Do you want to talk about that just really briefly? Yeah.
So the reveal is that the pastor that we've been hearing throughout the film has been bringing up, my daughter was captured by these devils and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And he reveals that his daughter is Maxine.
Yeah.
So Maxine has rejected the religious life, you know, fled to the city, to Dallas, joined, become a stripper.
Oh, I think Houston.
Houston, I'm sorry, I apologize to the people of Dallas. Houston has met Wayne, has now decided to become a porn star, is off to make her first film. You know, she's bought in on what she's going to do now, right? And
Did that pay off for you in any way?
Oh, yeah, because the movie's asking this question of like, you know, are we living the way we want to? Or are we living by like the code of society? And which one's better? Because having the judgment that comes with, you know, religion at times, and again, not to be like, but fucking sometimes, you know, religion can often make villains out of people who really shouldn't be made villains of.
But I don't think that it demonizes religion in a full way, because throughout the film, she continually repeats that mantra that she has learned, right?
Anyway, also Pearl and Howard struggle with this. It seems like they're the ones watching this pastor. So they struggle with this too, where it's like they know that they have murdered, they know they've killed, they know they've done wrong, they know they have these sexual proclivities, and they can't reconcile them with this religion. And That self-hate can turn into something even more monstrous.
Do you get a sense there's remorse there?
Not because of religion, but I do think they know they've done something wrong.
And I think that's kind of that's
Howard's trying to cover their tracks.
Yeah, exactly. It's trying to cover their tracks, and I think you could probably draw the connection or make the sort of hypothesis that he understands what could happen and he's trying to circumvent it, and he's not successful in this situation. And like I said at the beginning of the pod, is that he's got to stick, he's got to stay with his woman.
And remember,
he's got to stay with his partner and then help her get through it.
remember when Howard rented the home, the house, the cottage to Wayne, he's now surprised that Wayne brought people. He says, you never said anything about bringing these friends.
Yeah.
And then Wayne, like, you know, pads his palm with a few more dollars and says, yeah, don't worry about that. You know, but I think what Pearl sees, well, remember what the, well, let's get back to what the movie's called, X, the X Factor. What Pearl sees in Maxine, with an X in her name, by the way, is that she has this special quality that makes her so interesting and so beautiful and so exciting that Pearl recognizes she once had. So, Jamie, before we get to our rating, there's a couple of things I just wanted to tell you. So I had a few questions and predictions about this movie that did not come true. I already mentioned off the top that I had enough doubt while I was watching this that I was like, oh, man, is the reveal going to be that Howard and Pearl are not the killers? Like, that kept me going just long enough. And I was like, okay, no, we're still going down the normal track here. But there was two other thoughts that occurred to me while watching this movie. When we first heard about Howard having heart issues early in the film, I started thinking, like, I wonder if Bobby Lynn is going to, like, get cornered by Howard at some point, and she's going to, like, seduce him to get herself out of there and kill him. Like, she's going to, like, either she's going to, like, just, like, show her tits to him and make him have a heart attack, or she's going to, like, fuck him.
Okay, let me say
this. I didn't think it was going to go that far, but I did think my third question.
Hold on, let me just say this. Let me respond to the second one, and then you go to the third one. A different iteration in this film that doesn't humanize these porn stars, like, these essentially porn stars, that happens. But in this movie, because they're humanized more, and there's a sense of morality and a moral center of them separating, like, their relationships and their personal life and their professional life, that doesn't happen in this film. And I thought that was a smart thing, because I didn't think of it myself, but I absolutely could have seen Bobby Lynn doing, like, something like that to get her out of the
Howard to kill him.
Yeah, like exactly, or doing something where she's using sex as a weapon, and that's not really.
Well, and that's it. They paired her with Pearl, so she dies at Pearl's hands with the alligator, and then Jackson. I was about to say, because again, going back to the way blaxploitation films worked, you know, they use their dicks to get out of a situation sometimes, and so, like, I start thinking, holy shit, Pearl wants to fuck. Is Jackson going to survive this? Because he's like, all right. Oh, fuck you. I thought maybe he was going to go to that. I was
Rob,
like,
you always take things to an extreme.
Well, this movie. I mean, come on. Anyway, Rob, point
was,
being.
Was Jackson Hole getting all up in Pearl's hole? Like,
I'm saying that's what Pearl wanted, and he was there. He gave it to every other woman in the film. So,
but Pearl wanted a reconciliation with her husband, and was connected to Maxine because saw her former self, her beauty that she once had, once attained. Yeah. I think that's another reason why the movie's so good, is that I think there's just a lot more, everything's more layered, more depth. Yeah, everything's more layered in depth. But Jackson Hole.
The one thing I want to point about that is that Howard is the one who kills him. And I do think that plays into a little bit of
jealousy, or?
Yes, jealousy and racism, in the sense that there's a history of, you know, white people lynching black people and cutting their dicks off. Like, that happened, and it happened in Texas, probably still does. Like, that's and there's a fear of that white men have of, you know, black dicks because they're big. And that's a thing that's, like, been played out in a lot of different media, well, in reality, sorry, and then played out in media. And that's part of why blaxploitation subverted it and used and, like, flipped it around. So the black guy uses his dick to get out of situations. So you do see, like, he says, oh, he's a Marine before he shoots him, right? And the other thing about Marines is, what do? They show up on the dock, have fun, and then they head off to another place, right? And remember, Howard's also a military man. He went through World War I and II, and he's been committed to the same woman his whole life. So you could see there's a whole bunch of, like, things that don't jive between those two characters, where you could see that Howard doesn't say anything, but you could tell he doesn't approve of Jackson in a bunch of ways. And although racism isn't explicitly made clear, it could be there.
I see where your thinking is, and I agree. I think it's something that I, you know, broached a little bit myself, but.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in Blade too. Like, blaxploitation has a really unique and rich history that, like, it is reflecting on things that were happening, right? And it plays out in the movies in a very particular way, but, and those become movie tropes and stereotypes that are really hard to break.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And in many ways, blaxploitation responded to existing stereotypes, right? So
yeah, we talked about it, was it Fred Williamson, right? It was an actor in From Dusk Till Dawn that was a blaxploitation actor that you talked about at length. If you're interested in hearing Rob's critique, you've done some work on this actually in your professional life and academic life. So that's on the From Dusk Till Dawn podcast. Rob's got some really great insights into that. Okay. So you want to jump and you want to rate this?
Hell yeah.
All right, let's go, man. Okay, so what did I host this today, I think?
Yeah.
So then you go first.
I'm going to come in hard 4.5 steps out of 5, Jamie.
I fucking knew it.
I like this movie a lot, and I've listed it. I've said a whole bunch of the reasons. I'm actually trying to struggle, like, why isn't this a perfect movie? I think the only thing I'm going to say is tonally there's a bit of a balance change at the end that I wasn't disappointed by, but I just questioned, does that make it good or bad? Because – like I did expect almost a Vitch ending. Like I was having this feeling of, oh man, this movie's going down that road of the new slasher films or the new horror films, where elevated horror, whatever the hell we're calling it now, that like it's going to have an ending where everybody's dead and no one's going to be happy. And it is just a sense of doom. And I was worried it was going there. And I'm really glad it didn't go there, because I find them much more satisfying as a viewer to walk away from being like, ah, somebody lived. But that's sort of a silly thing. And I love that. I think that's why Elevated Horror likes to mess with our heads with that one, because they're like, why is that the thing you want so bad? When you came to see all these people die, why do you want one of them to walk away? So I was concerned that was going to happen. It didn't happen, but it sort of bent the other way into like comedy to a certain extent. But I just liked it. I thought his script was tight. Filmmaking was great. Sound design was great. Acting was fantastic. Man, I came into it cold, like I said at the beginning, and I was hugely satisfied and hugely enjoyed this movie all the way through.
Okay, 4.5 footsteps from Robert Lendrum, which is – that's a good score, people. That's a good rating. Rob, he's been on a cold streak lately. Everything we've watched, he's fucking hated. So whenever – you know, you sent me a message last night after I sent you a quick little text and said – what'd you think of the film? And there was two words back. Those two words were loved it. So I know that I knew you were going to like it, because this is the kind of film that you like. It's smart. It's clever. It's not trying to be something that it's not, but it allows itself to be something. It allows itself to build off things that are existing that are good in sort of new and interesting ways, and then deliver kind of a fresh product.
Yeah.
The studio at A24, and just because, and I feel pretty comfortable saying this, just because Rob and I weren't a huge fan of Hereditary, and I feel like we need to either repod Hereditary or release a version of what we did to let people know what we thought about that film, if you're interested in hearing what we thought about it. But, you know, A24, these guys are releasing a lot of the folk horror, you know, cool horror, stylized horror. And X is a slasher film that is not trying to be anything other than what it is, but again, packaged in a new, fresh way. I love the time spent on allowing the characters to breathe a little bit. We've talked about this at length. There's some really cool, interesting, there's just interesting themes to discuss. Like, how often do you look at the elderly and age in a horror film, really? And it's presented in a way that you can have a cool discussion on it, and how that's paralleled with young people making a porn movie. I thought that was fun. It's funny. It does get a little kind of, don't want to say campy, but the kills get a little bit, you know, kind of exaggerated near the end. But in classical slasher fashion, the heroine, the protagonist, she's, you know, she wins the day and she makes it in the truck as she's driving away. One of the things is the reason why I'm going to give it 4 stars is... No, 4 footsteps. I felt like I was in Siskel and Ebert. No, I'm giving it 4 footsteps for the simple fact that I'm not sure I found it that scary. And I'll tell you why. Mm. Pearl, at the beginning of the film, is introduced to us through a series of sort of sightings in a bedroom, sightings of long shots, sightings of, there's one where Maxine's down by the water, right? We talk about that, where she is swimming with the alligator chasing her. But there's one scene where she's She's sitting there and then Pearl's walking behind her. Makes you think of like from The Ring where you had like the really slow walk behind. It's a pretty effective technique to build some dread and to build fear, especially when there's no sound.
It Follows.
Yeah, It Follows is another one. Exactly. It's fucking probably taken right from there. Anyways, so they do a good job of that. But I find that that kind of goes away once you get an understanding more of the story, and it becomes more of a story and less of Pearl being like this like monstrous killer like she is, but the mystique is gone. And then she's humanized a little bit more, just like as a crazy fucking woman that's going to be killing you and is dealing with her own issues. So for me, everything was like really out in the open. So it didn't scare me. And I could have used a little bit more jump scare, a little bit more tension in the film. Because I love that stuff. If I had a wish list, it would just be, just give me a little bit more of those, give me some more of those unsettling moments. And I think this would have been damn near close to a perfect film. But make no mistake, this is a great horror film. It is a great new horror film. And it is one of the best new horror films in the subgenre of slasher that I've seen in a long time. So I loved it. 4 footsteps out of 5 from Jamie Roberts, co-host of Running Scared podcast.
You don't find Pearl getting into bed with Maxine unsettling enough? Like, what the f- that scene?
No, I was like, go on, girl. All right, Rob, what do we got going on, man? I'll tell you what we got. Actually, what do we got going on?
Hopefully we got more going on. We're going to put out a pod on Blade real soon, or vice versa. I don't know which one we're doing first, but they're both being worked on right now. We got a new Jogcast in the works, although because of my life, it's been hard to get a lot of work put onto it, but it's recorded. It's coming together. We've listened to the first about 7 minutes and we're looking at about a 45 minute production, maybe longer. Anyway, exciting. Besides that, we're just going to keep trying to crank out some more material.
Yeah, let's do. Let's just, you know what? You guys all know where to get the Running Scared podcast at gmail.com, Twitter, Instagram. We're there. We are just going to put our heads down and start making some content. The Jawcast is going to be out soon, at least a portion of it. So everyone's going to get a little bit of a little piece, and you'll be able to get those any audiobook retailer. But yeah, that's it. There's more content coming. We're podding. We're writing. We've got actually the sequel.
We're running. We're passing.
We got the sequel. How can we have a sequel to one that's not even released yet? I was just going to say,
we have the
sequel to the soon to be written. No, soon to be released in Salem Creature. That's going to be the new one. That's what it's called. Island Creature. And we have, I've started the sequel. It's going to be called, preliminary title, The Zoo.
Wait, isn't there a TV show called Zoo?
Zoo TV.
No. Okay. We'll get to it.
We'll get to it. Anyways.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next time on Running Scared.
The Running Scared podcast is written and produced by Robert Lentrum and Jamie Roberts, with original music by Jamie Roberts. This episode edited by Robert Lentrum. Find us on social media. Tune in next time for another horror review or Jawcast on Running Scared.
These old people are fucking crazy! I have to get out of this house before they keep me down! Run!
I told her to stay in the damn cellar!